Cora and her husband were proud to be Nicaraguans, were proud to be landowners, were proud of their families, of their cooperative. Cora enjoyed life and enjoyed the fruits of the revolution. About a month ago, the Nicaraguan army came into their cooperative and told Cora and her family that they were there in order that they might protect their cooperative. This Nicaraguan army consisted of 3 men, all armed. Cora and her family owned no gun. One evening, a strange man came to town, to their cooperative, and asked to stay overnight, and they opened up their home and let him stay. The next day, the Contra attacked her cooperative. They threw a grenade into her home and opened fire. Cora lost her husband. She couldn't tell us in her own words, but the staffers later, who had first talked with Cora after the attack, told us that he had been kidnapped. Cora's mother and father were killed by the Contra, as was her 2.5-year-old son. She ran screaming out of the house, asking, pleading, begging, screaming, shouting that they stop shooting. And in the process was wounded herself in the arm and has lost all ability to ever use that arm again. Her sister was critically wounded as well. And so Cora was in Managua for the first time in her life in the big city to visit her sister in the hospital. And she was scared. And Cora could care less about the Sandinistas or about the Contras. Cora wanted to live her life. And she knew it would never be the same, because she could not go back for fear of another attack. You see, the crime that Cora and her family committed was that her husband was the chief of this cooperative. I'd like to share with you this evening what Witness for Peace is. A little history about Nicaragua, because I think that helps focus for us and gives us a perspective of the situation there. I would like to share then some slides, and I have to confess, the slides that I have with me tonight are not of my recent trip. I was there last year with a group called the Global Center for Studies and Education. What a name. Augsburg College, Minneapolis. And took a 2-week tour of Central America. And so I have some slides that I'll show you from that. I returned from Nicaragua 2 weeks ago and haven't had the opportunity to receive those slides back and to put them into an orderly fashion. Then would like to share some of the advances of the revolution, some of the landmark achievements, and then also share some more effects of the Contras and some more stories about like Cora's. And then certainly would like to give you opportunity to ask questions and open it up for debate. Witness for Peace began 2 years ago this month when 150 North Americans wanted to make a statement, a nonviolent statement, a physical statement of their bodies along the Nicaraguan-Honduran border to protest their opposition to the U.S. foreign policy and to the U.S. backing of the Contras, which are attacking the civilian population. It began as a Christian organization and still has a deeply Christian identity. However, that has been opened up to people of all faiths, and in my view has been a real asset to the organization. Since that time, there have been delegations going at the rate of about 3 a month. Delegations from all countries, from all states of the United States. I traveled with the Oregon delegation. I'm from Eugene, Oregon, with a group of 20 people, a retired industrial engineer, an electrical engineer who at one time developed bombs and the working for the inner workings of those missiles, a couple Vietnam vets, school teachers, community professors, a professor at Oregon State University, a farmer, people of all walks, who, along with myself, wanted to make that same statement again in the Nicaraguan-Honduran border region, that the policy of U.S. aggression must stop. We traveled for 2 weeks in the country, spent about 5 days in Managua, the capital city, and then spent the remainder of our time in the country. And I know the map is small, but I'd like to point that out for you. Managua, the capital, here at the about the center of the country. And then we traveled to Jinotega, which is this region right here. Witness for Peace has a threefold purpose. First of all, it was organized to provide a spiritually based resistance to the U.S. policy toward Nicaragua. And then a second goal is to work towards fundamental change of that policy. Thirdly, it's to embrace and to uplift unity in diversity and work with all people who are committed to those first two goals, and that would include people of all faiths and backgrounds. We each signed a covenant before we left and also knew that we were placing our lives in danger and placing our trust in the organization and for our safety as well, but also knowing that we were going to be in a war zone and we could suffer those same effects of the contra-aggression. We signed a covenant that committed us to a prayerful, biblical approach to our presence there. We were committed to nonviolence, both in word and deed, committed to maintaining political independence. We were not guests of the Sandinistas, but went on our own accord. Our tour was organized by long-term people, of which there are 30 now in Nicaragua, who provide the logistics for tours as ours to travel around the country. And finally, to act in solidarity with the Nicaraguan people in whatever form that would take, to also work with them on constructive projects. A witness is one who tells what they have seen and heard, and that's why I'm here tonight. And it's a privilege for me to be here, and I dedicate this talk to Cora and to the people of Ernesto Acuña, whom we lived with for 5 days, who have suffered the effects of the contra-aggression. I can't help but tell what I have seen and heard. I must tell what I have seen to others and to our government. And so Witness for Peace is a response to what the people of Nicaragua are doing with their lives, and it's a response to what the United States government is doing as well. Witness for Peace has a network of relations in the country, predominantly works with SAPOD, which is made up of 37 Christian denominations, and there are many in the country, 37. 37 different Christian churches who provide development and relief work in different areas in the country. It's made up of priests of the popular church, the Church of the Poor, the networking with the Maranole, the Sacred Heart, the Presentation, and the Notre Dame Sisters as well. A little bit about Nicaraguan history. The history of Nicaragua is the history of United States presence in that region, in that country, for over 100 years. In 1856, a man by the name of William Walker declared himself president of Nicaragua as a United States citizen. It continued then in 1912 when the United States Marines invaded the country and remained there for 23 years until a man by the name of Sandino, Sandinistas, until Sandino and his guerrillas overthrew the Marines and they left. However, after the United States withdrew the Marines in 1933, the United States set up a puppet dictator by the name of Somoza. Somoza encouraged peace talks with Sandino and had him killed. Since 1933, the Nicaraguans suffered much oppression until 1979, July 19th of 1979, when they overthrew Somoza and his National Guardsmen. Somoza was brutal, was greedy. He owned over one half of the land of that country, owned almost all of the private businesses and corporations. Nicaragua, especially Managua, suffered a violent earthquake in 1972. It devastated the downtown region, and to travel in Managua today is to see a deserted downtown. There is no downtown. Many countries, including the United States, offered millions of dollars of economic assistance to rebuild Managua. In fact, over $600 was given, of which Somoza pocketed. Before Somoza left, he bombed most of the factories and private industries in that country, the same ones that he owned. He left $3 million in the country's coffers and left a foreign debt of $1.5 billion. That's a lot for a country the size of about the state of Ohio, with a population of about my home state of Oregon, less than 3 million people. As I mentioned, the Sandinistas overthrew Somoza and the National Guardsmen, which the United States funded all those years, on July 19, 1979. Many people fled the country at that time. Most of those people were either middle class or upper middle or upper class professional people, as well as many of the 50,000 National Guardsmen. However, about 10,000 National Guardsmen banded together a couple years later in 1981, and they formed the core of the Contras, or the counter-revolutionaries that you hear about today. Some of the advances. Prior to the insurrection in 1979, healthcare was unheard of for the poor people. Today in Nicaragua, healthcare is free. It's not great healthcare, because medicines are in short supply. Technological equipment is unheard of. United States replacement parts, are impossible to get. Before Somoza, and that seems to be the dividing line, there's before Somoza time and after Somoza time. Before Somoza, education was not compulsory and was not free. It was for the privileged. The illiteracy rate in 1979 was over 50%. In 1 year's time, that rate was lowered to 12%. Education is now free. There are adult literacy centers and education centers all over the country. Schools have been set up all over the countryside as well. People in Nicaragua are poor, but they have food. And that's been a result of the revolution as well. Until 2 months ago, the staples, corn, beans, rice, sugar, were all subsidized so that each Nicaraguan could afford those basic things essential to their health. However, 2 months ago, they lifted all those subsidies and the prices have skyrocketed. The economy in Nicaragua today is a shambles. Last year when we were there, the official exchange rate was 28 cordobas to a dollar. 2 weeks ago when I was there, it was 650 to a dollar. They adopted the black foreign exchange rate, the black market rate. The revolution is in jeopardy. The situation is very vulnerable in Nicaragua today. They made great human rights advances. They immediately abolished the death penalty after they overthrew Somoza. They offered amnesty to all of the 50,000 National Guardsmen. The maximum prison sentence in Nicaragua today is 30 years, and they have instituted prison reform and rehabilitation programs. Today in Nicaragua, if you want land, and if you can make the land produce, you can own land. Nicaragua is land rich. They have more land than they know what to do with. It's different from other countries in Central America who are land poor. They don't have a lot of land. If you don't make the land work in Nicaragua, you lose it. The government will take it. They provided great credit for cooperatives, for individuals as well, to get themselves going into agriculture. Today in Nicaragua, there is freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, freedom to elect who they want to run their government. At this time, I'd like to show some slides that just give a representative sample of what Nicaragua was like. Somoza is dead. In 79, he fled to Miami, along with a lot of other Nicaraguans. Nicaragua Libre, free Nicaragua. This billboard, of which there are many in Nicaragua, says, 50 years and Sandino lives. This commemorated the 50th anniversary of his death. Sandino is to the Nicaraguans as George Washington is to our country. This is one of Somoza's tanks that was left in the northern region of Matagalpa, symbolized to the people, to remind the people of the oppression, the militarization of their country under his tyranny. Somoza was great for culture. However, the poor people, the people of Managua, were not able to attend this beautiful cultural palace or cultural pavilion in downtown Managua. Today, the Sandinistas have opened this up and they have great cultural events for all people. FSLN is the official Sandinista party, and this just shows the slogan on one of the hills in Managua. This is the Great Cathedral of Managua, which was destroyed in 1972 by the earthquake. The roof caved in, and these pictures are just a result of what was left. In contrast, the cathedral to me represents the church of the ladder, or the hierarchical church, the church that once was and still is for some people in Nicaragua. But today in Nicaragua, the church, the popular church, is the church of the poor, and this church represents one of those places of worship. Nicaragua is 85% Catholic, 15% Protestant. A farm cooperative in Matagalpa, where they grow coffee. Coffee is crucial to Nicaragua's economy and is their major cash crop. Here again at the cooperative. These people here represent land owners, and many for the first time in their lives. Under Somoza, most of them worked for hacienda owners for about 10 cords a day, which at that time was about 30 cents. The people are armed because they will defend what they have gained under the revolution. There are many slogans, political slogans, all over the country. This particular one says, we are preparing for the coming of the Yankees. One of the health clinics, of which there are many, but again, not a lot of medicine. Medicines are in short supply. Most of the doctors are from foreign countries. A special education school, there were none under Somoza. And here we are at a Salvadoranian refugee settlement in Nicaragua. And I believe these children are standing over the makings of a bomb shelter and standing in the trench there. The children are instructed and know where to go in case of an attack. Lights back on, please. A little bit about the effects of the Contras. The Contras, as you probably know, are completely funded by the United States government. Their purpose is to destabilize the government, to destabilize the economy, in order that democracy might reign. We traveled to Jinotega, which is a region in the north which grows over 90% of the coffee in the country. It makes up one-third of the foreign exchange that Nicaragua earns. In this province of Jinotega, 63 new schools were built after 79. Over half of them have been closed because of the Contras attacking them. The Contras target civilian populations, cooperatives, state farms, schools, health workers, education workers, anything that represents an advance of the revolution. Very seldom do they attack military installations or outposts. In fact, it's generally the Nicaraguan army which chases them and attacks them, trying to push them back up into Honduras or Costa Rica. In Nicaragua, 1,600 university students have given up 2 years of their time, of their schooling, in order to go into the farthest parts of the country to train the people, to teach them how to read and write. And over 600 of them have been killed by the Contras since 1981. And finally, I'd like to share just a couple stories about Ernesto Acuna. It was the cooperative in which we lived for 5 days, made up of 40 families, none of which owned land prior to the revolution. In 1983, they came together of their own free will to work the land that they received from the government, abandoned by one of the hacienda owners who fled the country when the insurrection happened. These people worked for about 30 cents a day, having to take their children with them and having them play in the hammock tied between the coffee beans, the coffee trees. Ernesto Acuna, for me, is the faces of the people who, upon hearing gunshots, know where to go to their outposts, to their guard posts, and their trenches, which completely surround their village. They were attacked last November by 400 Contras. Fortunately, none of them were killed, and they were able to thwart the attack. However, the Contras did attack their and successfully burn their coffee processing plant, which is crucial to their economy. These people are self-sufficient and grow all their own beans and corn. They do receive rice from the government. Coffee is their mainstay. It's what buys them clothes and any medicine that they have to pay for. It's something like 10 cords for any prescription. Coffee is their life. And these people have had to completely entrench their village, and they stand guard 24 hours a day, anticipating an attack at any time. Of the 5 days that we were there, we were on alert for three, meaning the Contra had been sighted, a Nicaraguan army scout came in on a donkey, and told us that they were a couple kilometers away and we were on alert. Everyone that can carry a gun, from 11-year-old boys and girls on up, mans a station. They know where to go, they know where their post is. And so there were about 60 people of this village of 200 people who were ready to fight to defend their land and their little health center that had maybe $100 worth of medicines, and their school, and their daycare center. These people all are armed, and that's a way of life. Ernesto Acuña is the story of Maria and Narciso, with whom I lived and had the privilege of living, who shared their Christian faith with me deeply, who have a relationship with a God who they believe sides with the poor and with the oppressed. It's the story of Maria and Narciso at 5 a.m. Maria standing over the cook stove, the wood fire stove in her kitchen with a dirt floor, preparing the daily 3 times a meal of rice, beans, and tortilla. And standing over that wood fire, preparing that food, and it's her husband studying his notes for mechanic class and proudly studying those notes because he had been elected by the cooperative to run the tractor that they received from the Soviet Union, the very same tractor which was called and identified as a Soviet MiG back in November of 84, of which the United States government said there were MiGs being unloaded on the ships in Corinto on the Pacific coast. And it's a joke to the people of the village because those MiGs were Soviet tractors. Narciso and the people of the village are buying that tractor from the government and making payments over a 5-year period. Narciso is so proud that he was elected to go to school in Matagalpa for 3 months to learn how to run that tractor and to learn how to fix it. And I can still see him driving up and down the dirt, the mud, streets of Ernesto Acuña, and the mud was about 6 inches deep every morning that he was home because he was so proud of that tractor, and all he was doing was giving people rides on a tractor. They call it their tractor avión, their flying tractor. They have all, they as well as all people in the village, have lost members of their family from the contra-aggression. For over 8,000 people, civilian people, some military personnel, but mostly civilian people, have been killed by the Contras, of which our government funds and continues to fund, even under the term and the guise of humanitarian aid. I asked them what keeps them going, and they said it's their faith in God, a God who lives and works for the poor. And they also said, we have the combative spirit, and they will die for what they have, because to lose what they have is death. It's a tremendous hope that they have for their country and their people and their future. They know how to read and write for the first time in their lives. Maria, I can still see Maria. I asked her to write down the names of her family and everyone's family in the village, and it took her 10 minutes to write about 6 names, but she could write. She could do it. And the pride on her face. And for this, our government says the freedom fighters are justified in working to overthrow what these people have attained through the revolution. It's these people in the villages, in the cooperatives, of whom there are thousands, who are the communists, who don't even know political affiliation. They do know Sandino because Sandino lives in their hearts. It just doesn't make sense to me. Not at all. And as a Christian, I must respond because these are my brothers and sisters in Christ in Nicaragua, struggling for freedom, struggling for the right to eat, to live, to have shelter, to read. And their hope is their children. The Nicaraguan people are incredible. They are very self-critical, and we heard many people. We spoke with all kinds of people in Managua and in the countryside, Contra supporters and Sandinista supporters, and the plain people like Cora who could care less. We spoke with the Catholic hierarchy who opposed the revolution, who favored the United States government policy. And we spoke with opposition lawyers and with people on the bus who complained about the high prices and the economy and how bad things were. But there was freedom of speech, and they could talk about it, and they could complain. And for this, our government says it's a totalitarian state. They're exporting revolution, and they're under a state of terror. The Nicaraguans are under a state of siege, and they are heavily armed. But it's because they will defend what they have earned under the revolution. There's a famous saying in Nicaragua, and I still struggle with it, but it's entre cristianismo y revolución hay no contradicción. Between Christianity and revolution, there is no difference. And for me, that sums up Nicaragua. I'd like to open it up for questions and at this time, and would like you to do that. And anything goes at this time.
Most people
please.
In favor of the Contras, what are their comments? Why are they in favor of the Contras?
The situation in Nicaragua is complex, but to make it simple, and I hate to generalize, but the dissatisfied people in Nicaragua today are the people who lost under the revolution. They lost their land. They lost their wealth, their status, and their power. It's the middle class people and the upper class people who are dissatisfied. They lost material gains.
What percentage,
Of people? I can't answer that exactly. The elections, I think, are a good indication of where the people are at. And we have heard many allegations that the recent elections last fall were a farce. But there were many internationalists there from all the countries in Europe, West German and the Norwegian countries, Italy, Greece, Spain, France, Soviet Union. And they monitored those elections and said that they were fair and just. Seven political parties participated in those elections. 67% of the people voted for the Sandinista government.
How are the people able to obtain guns and ammunition?
How are they able? The guns are all from Eastern Bloc countries. The funding for the military transportation and equipment and supplies comes from the Nicaraguan government. And it's hurting the economy and the people tremendously. There is a draft, a mandatory 17-year-old draft for all Nicaraguans. Over 40% of Nicaraguans' current budget is spent on military. Sure. Okay. The question was concerning human rights allegations since the 79 revolution. The allegations that there have been human rights abuses with the forced resettlement of the Indian people.
And genocide.
The Nicaraguans made some serious mistakes. The Sandinistas, I should say, made serious mistakes after the revolution with the forced relocation of the Indian population on the East Coast. Nicaragua is essentially two countries in one. The western part of the country is Roman Catholic, predominantly Sandinistas. The eastern part are separated by mountains, large mountains, and essentially are their own people, mostly blacks and Indians. And there's been that tension for many years. And the Sandinistas did make some mistakes and admitted to those mistakes after the revolution when they forcibly removed many of those Indians from the northern region. Yes, and they're continuing to relocate Indians. We visited an asentamiento, which is a relocation settlement of Sumo Indians who, on the northern border, for reason of protection, were moved by the Sandinista government. We spoke with those people freely, and they hated being where they were, and they were suffering terribly. They were suffering in their spirits. But they had more food and more supplies than other people that we visited, more food than Ernesto Acuña. And they knew why they were there, and they hated it, but they also knew that they were safe. And they did not care to get involved with the Contras. The mosquito, and there are still tensions there with the mosquito Indians. Right, that claim has been made, yes. I don't really know a lot about the mosquito Indians. I do know about the Sumo. There is that division between the Indians alone, right there.
I could respond a little bit.
Please.
I also wanted to, but last December, we met with a priest or a pastor who worked on the Atlantic coast with mosquito Indians, and he was a mosquito himself. And at one point, shortly after the revolution, he had been denied to go and serve in that area because he was protesting the removal of his people, and he had been helped by the government and kept him going. And that's part of the mistakes of the revolution that they were talking about. By talking with government officials and such, over about a year, they were able to allow him to go back to that coastal region, and he spoke very highly of how they have confessed to their mistakes. In fact, he said government officials came to him even apologized to him for what they had done,
yeah,
and said, you know, please appeal to your people. And also with that, perhaps you can speak a little bit about what has happened with Brooklyn Rivera. Are you familiar at all?
No, I'm not. Is he a Contra leader?
He was part of the Contras, the leader of the Mosquito Indians who were fighting with the Contras. And they have been negotiating for a number of months because the Sandinistas have improved their treatment of mosquitoes. And the last report I read is that he had asked the Mosquito Indians to stop fighting the Congress. He was their general leader. So that's
there were also tensions with the Moravian Church shortly after the revolution, and Norman Bent, who was a prominent pastor for that church, was detained and jailed. That's the guy. Okay, yeah. And he has made public statements of the incredible ways in which the Sandinistas have gone out of their way to try to mend and reconcile. Please.
Some of the study groups that have gone to Nicaragua, what communication has been brought forth between those groups and coming back with the senators of the U.S. government?
Question was, what kinds of communication have happened with study groups that have gone to Nicaragua when they come back with their senators and congresspeople? As with our delegation, one of the goals of Witness for Peace is to work towards change of U.S. policy, and so we were all highly encouraged and are about the task of personally visiting our congresspeople and senators and encouraging others to write letters, make phone calls, to explain what we have experienced in the country. Does that answer your question?
Do you feel that some of the results, like some of the bills that you're funding, have not passed in the first go-around, was that result of a lot of communication that's been brought back from Nicaragua?
Well, I would like to believe that. I am extremely pessimistic after the recent vote. But in my personal opinion, I believe the results of that last Contra aid were a reflection of upcoming 86 elections for many of those congresspeople. And we cannot go soft on communism, is the line and the fear. I think the greatest fear for the United States government and its policy is that a model for a third world country just might work, and we didn't come up with it. I think that's the greatest fear. Please, in the back. Freedom of press, good question. La Prensa, of which we had were supposed to have had an interview with last year with my delegation, and again this year, canceled both times. I think that says something there. La Prensa, as all the newspapers in Nicaragua are censored, Nicaragua is under a siege, a military siege. Their reasons for press censorship, and we spoke with Nuevo Diario, which is one of the middle newspapers. The reasons for the press censorship are to provide security and also military for military reasons, and also so that economic policies or propaganda about shortages don't happen. In other words, the economy is in a wreck, is a shambles, and for instance, if one of the papers would say that beans are in short supply, the people would hear that, read that, and they would go out and buy all the beans, and there would be a short supply. Those were the reasons we were given.
That's the reason for censorship?
That's the reason for press censorship. We saw the articles that were censored in front of La Prensa in Nicaragua, in Managua, and they were military articles reporting different military maneuvers and operations. I'm not sure if our country had press censorship, if there were that kind of security reasons when we were under war too, in World War II. In Nicaragua? I can't answer that. There are some coming into the country, but I believe there are more refugees going towards the north, Mexico, LA, United States.
Going back
please.
To the question on Cora, was this stranger, was he a hunter, and what happened to the three?
The question was, what happened to this stranger? Was he a contra that came into Cora's home, and what happened to the three Nicaraguan soldiers? They were all killed. And Cora believes that the man, the stranger, into their cooperative was a contra informant. Please.
Since you were there both with the Augsburg Study Group and now more recently with Witness for Peace, the one difference that I heard you speak of perhaps was you stayed right in the village for 5 days in the latter group. Are there other differences, or how do those two study groups compare? Do you do basically the same thing when you went, or did you
Witness for Peace was much more intense, but the main reason for that was we were only in Nicaragua 5 days, 4 days, 4 or 5 days last year, and this was a 2 week experience. Basically, we saw most of the same people and representatives of different organizations. In that respect, they are very similar, and in fact, Witness for Peace and the Augsburg Study Center have very good relationships and do lots of coordinating and networking together. Jack Nelson Palmyra spoke to us, and he is on staff at the Augsburg House. He spoke to us this year for Witness for Peace. Back there.
Did that have any effect as far
I'm not, okay. The question is, was Ortega's visit to the Soviet Union influential in our group's decision to go to Nicaragua? To okay. No, in that Daniel Ortega had been to Moscow many times before. The Soviet Union was not his sole country that he went to on that trip. He visited many countries on that particular trip. Also heard that the Nicaraguan ambassador who spoke in Eugene at the university about a month before I left, and he talked about that very same thing and indicated to us that that trip had been planned long in advance. That's what he said. Back here in the red shirt. The question is, what does the Soviet Union have to gain by making the revolution succeed in Nicaragua? What comes to my mind is that a different type of government might be just as justifiable. It would give them some credibility. I can't answer that. I don't know.
Is our biggest fear that of communism in this particular case, and just that word itself?
Is the big fear in the United States, is the fear communism? Is that the red flag word?
That's the red flag word. If we could just change that to a better understanding, and that the fact that the system is working, mm-hmm. just let it be, mm-hmm. and maybe get out and allow it to happen.
Yeah. In my opinion, that is the essence. Nicaragua is a socialistic state. There are elements of Marxist-Leninism in the government, and yet that can't be denied.
Do you have a lobbyist group in Washington, D.C.?
Witness for Peace? No, we do not. It operates on a grassroots level and tries to encourage people and groups to influence their own senators and congresspeople. Jane.
I sense that even if it's ruined as a fear of communism or perhaps the fear of revolution, and I guess that's very real, but I just feel so sad that we're willing to take part in atrocities and use that as a solution to, even if it is communism, to conquer it. That's so far from my faith stance, and I guess I just. That hurts to know that the United States has not supported or shown any go for the kind of peace relationship with the Central American countries and the Latin American countries working together on determining their own destiny, their own way for peace, and we have not supported that. And I don't feel half the standards the Sanders are doing to see the wrongness of supporting terrorism.
Just a response to that, I have learned, and it's a hard lesson for me, that Christianity is not democracy. I don't believe that anymore. As Christians, we are bound together regardless of political ideology, race, creed, background, political affiliation. And as a Christian, I cannot not respond to the atrocities of the Nicaraguan people. My brothers and sisters in Christ. Please, in the back. Okay. The Pope the people in Nicaragua were very glad that the Pope chose to visit Nicaragua. I believe it was 2 years ago now. And they flocked into Managua. They say that there were 1 million people who traveled for days, who walked, who rode animals, whatever they could do to get there. The people were very disappointed in his visit and disillusioned because the Pope did not recognize the advances of the revolution, health care, education, and those kinds of things, the literacy campaign. And the thing that really perturbed most of the people was that the day before, 17 Nicaraguans were killed by Contras in the northern region, and each of their mothers were in the front row of that mass of people requesting a prayer for the loss of their sons. And the Pope denied them that privilege and that petition, and that's when the crowd became excited and chanted for this prayer, and that's when the Pope yelled out, "Silencio," silence, silence. And in the people's eyes, and most of them are poor, that was a real slap in the face.
Why did you deny that prayer?
Perhaps for political reasons. Perhaps that might have been too political of a stance. Because that might be giving support to the Sandinistas. Over here. Did I say that the Catholic hierarchy opposed the Sandinistas? Yes, they adamantly do and are very vocal about that. Yes, it's the communism red flag word. Also, the hierarchy, generally the people that attend those churches, Obando Bravo, the archbishop, who is now a cardinal, the people who attend that churches are generally not poor people, but people of middle class. People in nice clothes. Here.
I feel funny when you say that communism is a red flag word. It's also a system that systematically tries to get rid of any belief in God. And I feel so confused by what you're saying. And you've been there, and I want to believe you, but on Christian Broadcasting Network the other day, a man who had just returned, like you, told about the schools where they were ridiculing children's faith and telling them to bow their heads on their desk and pray to God for candy. And then they look up and of course there's no candy. And then they say, pray to the Sandinistas for candy or Ortega, I can't remember what it was. And then of course they're standing there with a bag of candy. And this man also claimed to have been there and had seen things and had quite a different story. How do we know what to believe?
The question is, how do we know what to believe? Good question. For me, it helps me to think, okay, what would be in the poor's best interest in this case? Now, that doesn't always help in answering and responding to something like that.
Well, it doesn't for me because historically, Marxist-Leninist governments have led to oppression of people and denial of their faith in Christ, and a denial of their freedom to be self-determining. And I feel that that would be very bad for poor people, but I do agree with you too that a lot of them don't care less about the political rulers, who they are. Their needs are so great.
Between Christianity and revolution, there is no difference. That's very difficult for me to understand. I have not been born of that struggle, not participated in that. But many of the leaders of the Sandinista movement are Christian, were Christian, and are today. Many of them were Catholic priests and are in important leadership positions in the government today. So, I believe that a people have a right to their own destiny and sovereignty.
Do you think then that this would be the first time in history that a communist government would...
The question is, would this be the first time in history that a communist government might work? And in self-determination. Boy, I'm going to hope so, because it's a country that's striving to meet the needs of people.
It's not fair to consider that Nicaragua
we all know and agree that the Soviet Union is doing things that you can never agree with. But it's very clear from all factions that they're trying to do a new experiment in Nicaragua that is mixed all along in terms of economy, private and state ownership, politics. They have appointees from all the political parties in the assembly that decides, and the religious bodies, they're trying to use that word mix into affirm pluralism. That's one of the key objectives of the government in Nicaragua now, that they want to affirm pluralism.
And as you mentioned, another one is private economy. 60% of the economy is mixed, is of the private sector.